friends, and welcome. Friday morning is here, and that means Sam Nation is on the podcast airwaves. Very happy to have you here. Of course, we are in our undisclosed location, deep behind the orange curtain, making radio great again. We're down an important person. Dr. Audio is here, but producer Robbie is taking the day off to celebrate my birthday. So we miss you, Robbie, and look forward to having you back here next week. Let me explain this week to you in one simple phrase. I am putting the Democratic Party on suicide watch. Because between the I will go through it all very carefully, but between what has happened on the Supreme Court, both in terms of the decisions that were laid out this week that came out beginning on Monday, also the news of Anthony Kennedy, the so-called swing vote on the Supreme Court of the United States, notice that he is retiring. And then if I look at this crazy election in New York, I know you may have missed it. It's just one congressional election in a very Democratic district. I recognize that. But you put some of these things together and you begin to realize that the left is really screwed. OK, I'll get into all these details. First of all, the Kennedy retirement. If you were anywhere in front of a mainstream media news source this week, when that news broke, everyone went bananas. You don't have to be a Supreme Court watcher, an attorney, or anyone in the legal know to have realized that this was somehow very monumental to everyone on the left, and I will explain to you why. Well, because Kennedy was not a reliable vote. A swing vote means that Kennedy is not somebody who many times voted with the conservative bloc of justices. And when we talk about conservatism on the court, I'll tell you what I mean by that. This is originalism, is what the term is called. Originalism means that you are reading the plain intent of the Constitution to make determinations about law. David French in National Review wrote a great piece about this. The gist of the piece is that Americans should expect a greater move to an originalist Supreme Court. But describing originalism, David French says, there's a profound difference between judges who approach a legal conflict with the question, what does the Constitution mean? Versus those who ask instead, what does justice demand? And so what you have when I, as a lawyer, when I read these decisions that come from the Supreme Court, and I look at what the liberal justices are doing, they are first social justice warriors and justices interested in upholding the Constitution second. David French writes in his piece here, in the National Review yesterday, I believe. Yesterday, yes. He talks about a judge when he was a young lawyer. He runs into an old Democratic judge who's a big-time liberal. And this judge says to him, basically, you know, look, son, let me educate you here. This is how it is. There's law, and then there's what's right. My job is to do what's right. Now, what that says to me, and a lot of judges do this, by the way, not even on constitutional law questions, they will look to do what's right first. So they will make a determination about a particular issue based on their personal sense of right and wrong, and then find a legal justification for that. And that is not how the interpretation of the Constitution ought to work. Because we ought to go to the Constitution to tell us what is right and wrong, not go to the feelings of some judge that, you know, is a burned out hippie from the flower child from the 60s. I'm not disparaging the wise Latina Sonia Sotomayor. Or Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? I mean, we're not Darth Bader Ginsburg. This is exactly how the decisions come down from the Supreme Court. Very emotional on the left. And Kennedy was one of those justices. Even though he was appointed by Reagan, he got emotional in his decisions. And he would put that in his decisions. If you remember Obergefell, the gay rights case. He wrote, quote, "Marriage responds to the universal fear that a lonely person might call out only to find out no one is there." Okay, I don't even know. What does that mean? It's touchy-feely, but it has nothing to do with the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that you're guaranteed not to be lonely. And it's that type of analysis that we don't want on the court. We don't want the court making law based on their feelings. We want the court to keep our crazy legislators, be they on the left or on the right, keep them in check by following the plain letter meaning of the Constitution. So I am asking you now a very important question. Why does Anthony Kennedy, right? He's young, relatively. He's 81. And there's no known health problems or anything like that. Why is he retiring now? Why now? Why, and more importantly, why is the swing vote, right? He's the swing vote on the court. He's the guy who's prided himself at being a tiebreaker and oftentimes standing up for some of these things that he believes in very passionately and protecting civil liberties and the like from a more originalist view. So if this, why is he retiring now? Well, in other words, I'll ask another question. Why is he retiring now so that it virtually guarantees that Trump is going to pick his replacement, right? It's almost certain. He's not waiting another year. He doesn't want to get anywhere close to the presidential election. Well, I think that this has, no one's really examined this. Nobody's really looked at this. But I think the most interesting thing here is that I think that even some of these people here in our country, and I'm noticing it with friends of mine that are attorneys and doctors and professionals and other intelligent people who maybe have been a little bit more liberal as they've gotten older, are now realizing that the country is going too far with crazy, that we've just taken things. Look at this. Trump comes out with a travel ban, right? He comes out with a travel ban, and immediately what happens? People that totally tangential people like, some random people come along and sue to stop the president in this act of resistance. Right. Everybody wants to lay on the tracks to stop Trump. And you have a few individuals with a few enterprising left wing states that are able to stop and block temporarily the policy of the United States, a duly elected president. And the court has been shutting all of these down, right? Trump has been winning in the Supreme Court. The most recent decision being Trump v. Hawaii, which was the travel ban. It's another thing that came out on Monday. So Trump's winning these fights. But the justices involved, even a guy like Kennedy, is realizing the left is getting too crazy. I have to ensure that the court, that this seat does not fall into the hands of the crazy left. I'm better off with an originalist. I'm better off because he knows who Trump's going to pick, right? Of course, Kennedy looks at Gorsuch and says, all right, Trump picked Gorsuch. And Gorsuch is a top-notch originalist justice. I may not agree with him on everything. I may be a little more touchy-feely. But at least this is a guy that's going to follow the law. I absolutely think this. So he must like, well, look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This is a great example of how somebody can get a little too high on themselves and end up screwing the pooch, so to speak. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is older than dirt. She's ancient. She could fall over, drop dead any day. And I'm not trying to be rude here or putting her in some sort of death pool. But I'm saying Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for anybody that's going to go on the court, it was a shock that it was Scalia first. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg, back in 2015, Obama's term is coming to an end. And they're pleading with her to retire. Please, dear God, Ruth, retire. Get out of there. We could lose the election. And what does she say? Well, she's reading the polls and she's not listening to Sam Nation. So she's reading the polls, watching the mainstream media, watching the news. And everybody's telling her what? Ah, Trump, he doesn't got a chance. Ah, the Republicans, they're lost in the wilderness. Ah, it's Hillary. She's an unstoppable force. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for all of her perceived brilliance, makes the stupid move of hanging on. Well, what does this mean? I mean, forget Kennedy. What if Ruth Bader Ginsburg goes in the balance of Trump's term? It's a catastrophe. And every court watcher on the left was hitting themselves. Everybody expected that Trump would at least name Ruth Bader Ginsburg's replacement. And Ginsburg, by the way, is a big liberal, right? She's a guaranteed liberal vote on the court every single time. And so that would have been a catastrophe. Well, instead, now Kennedy's retiring. And so Trump is already in one term up to two justices. Now, the other reason I'll tell you Kennedy retires, generally speaking, if a Republican president appoints somebody or a Democrat appoints somebody, there is an understanding that that justice will do what they can to ensure that another Republican president names his successor. And this is in part why Sandra Day O'Connor stepped down during Bush's term, paving the way for her replacement, who was Samuel Alito, if you'll recall. And that's an understanding. But Kennedy's a guy who's prided himself at being a renegade, being a wild card. He's enjoyed playing that role of foil on the court, and yet he is stepping down voluntarily. And unless there's some, you know, other, you know, illness or something forcing him to go, he's relatively young by the standards of the Supreme Court at 81, still able to fulfill his duties, still very active. But he wants to ensure, because he's not going to bank on it like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? He's not going to bank on Trump getting reelected in 2020. So he is ensuring that his replacement, he would prefer an originalist replacing him, somebody who will side with Clarence Thomas and somebody who will side with Justice Alito and other conservative members of the court, than having it go to the crazy radical left. And I think that tells you and I everything we need to know about how far kooky left these justices, these left-wing courts, and I don't mean just the Supreme Court, but I also mean the district courts and the Court of Appeals are getting. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is the most overturned court anywhere of the Court of Appeals. They're always getting overturned because they're ruling based on emotion and not logic. And if you're a serious justice, if you're a serious scholar of the Constitution, you're fed up with this. You're over it. And I think that's very telling. Now, there's a political component to this now that I think is very interesting. And the political component is, what does this do for the midterms? If you've been following the show and you're relatively awake as far as the news going on in the country, one of the big kerfuffles right now is the question of, is there going to be a blue wave coming in November? Are the Democrats going to clean up? And the conventional wisdom has been, mostly in the left-wing media, right, that there's a blue wave coming because there's an enormous amount of anti-Trump sentiment. And the anti-Trump sentiment, there's a statistic that came out, for example, that in key swing states, there's a poll done, and I don't place a lot of value in this, but I'm sharing it with you because it's somewhat relevant to my point. And that is, this poll showed that while Trump's approval rating was relatively high, close to 50%, his would I vote for him again rating, or would I reelect him, give him a second term, was substantially lower, in many cases by 10, 12, 15 points. Now, what does this create? This creates apathy, right? If that poll is true, you have apathy on the right. The Republican voters are either comprised of diehard Trumpists who are not going to go out and vote for mediocre Republican Party establishment candidates, or you've got Republicans who are just not enthused about anything going on, who are pissed off at Trump and who are staying home that election. They don't care. By Kennedy retiring, suddenly they care. These voters all care, because if there's anything that is unifying, even to a very fractured Republican Party, it's the Supreme Court. It's the idea that you're going to get an originalist conservative justice on the court to replace Kennedy. And anybody that is a regular voter, anybody, you know, that group of voters that you have to get to the polls in order to achieve anything, those voters are all going to show up, or more of them are going to show up, at least, because they're going to say, look, I can't let Congress, I can't let the Senate go. If the states that have a Senate election where there's a senator up for re-election, those states, Republicans are going to now show up in droves because they're going to want to make sure that there are enough butts in seats come the next session of Congress to ensure that the president's pick is confirmed. So this is important. In other words, this event may very well change the outcome of the midterm elections. And I think this point is getting largely ignored because, again, the media is so focused on Trump hate and they're so focused on everything that they loathe about Trump that they're disregarding the effect. And they're so furious, too, with Anthony Kennedy retiring because of what it does to the court. But they're forgetting the political ramifications of it. All right. Don't go anywhere. I'll tell you more about the Supreme Court decisions that affect you and I up next. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, yes! Rarely wrong, always right, reporting for duty. Now, one of the decisions that came down from the Supreme Court, and pardon me, I get excited about the Supreme Court because, in my view, the court is, being, right, one of the branches of government, being an important check and balance to insane things that are done in the legislature. And I also think, and by that I mean by Congress, right, the House and the Senate. I also think that the court, I do think that the court should have a grounding role to play, an equalizing role to play when it comes to establishing law, not in writing law, not in creating law, but in taking existing law and trimming the ridiculousness from it, okay? In Trump v. Hawaii, this is the case that I'm not going to bore you with the whole procedural history. Basically, you remember Trump put out an executive order. He gets sued. He says, all right, I'm withdrawing that executive order. So he puts out a second executive order, revising the countries that are in it. I think he pulls Iraq from the list. And he basically says it's a temporary stay, and he gets sued again, this time by Hawaii and one other state and some guys. So there's a bunch of plaintiffs suing Trump. They get an injunctive order preventing Trump from enforcing it. The court grants an injunctive order because, of course, these judges that are in Hawaii and Oregon and all these places are liberal, you know, never Trumpers, members, secret members of the Trump resistance army. So they are. They are there. They block it. The Supreme Court has to come in and lift that injunction. And then something else happens in that time period. And this is what a lot of people don't understand about the Trump Hawaii immigration case. It's not about that initial executive order. There is then, after a period of review, I think about 6 months, Trump issues a proclamation. And the presidential proclamation says, look, we've looked at it. These six or seven countries, whatever they are problematic because, for one, they don't have a reliable ID system. They don't have they're not presenting us with the data that we're asking for. They don't follow up, for example, on lost or stolen passports. I mean, they're very objective standards that say, look, these countries are our problem. They are state sponsors of terror. They're bad guys. And by the way, they have no way of really verifying who it is that's coming over into this country. So we can't verify if they can't verify. And on that basis, we're putting a to-be-determined block on all visas coming from these seven countries. And it goes again. Trump gets sued based on that proclamation. Well, the court struck it. Thank goodness, because federal law is really clear about this. It's totally clear. It's black letter law in the federal code. I'm going to tell you which section. It doesn't matter. I have the section here. But it basically is very clear that it says the president has basically omnipotent power to come in and declare who is in the country and who is not in the country, as long as it is for the safety and security of the United States. It's a very broad, broad rule. So the left comes in and says, well, forget the law. We don't care about the law. We care about Trump's tweeting. Trump's out there tweeting that he doesn't want Muslims here. And these countries are, you know, predominantly Muslim. So clearly Trump hates Muslims and it's discriminatory. Well, the most populous Muslim country, what is it? Is it Indonesia? Is that the most populous Muslim country? At any rate, the number of very populous Muslim countries such as Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, are not on the list. And the court decides that at least facially, this is totally non-discriminatory. But again, in this process, the presidency is hamstrung by all these left-wing crazy justices. I loved one of the concurring opinions that was put out by Justice Clarence Thomas. And here's what he said about injunctions. These injunctions, quote, are beginning to take a toll on the federal court system, preventing legal questions from percolating through the federal courts, encouraging foreign shopping, and making every case a national emergency for the courts and for the executive branch. He's calling them out. It's pretty powerful. He was so furious with this that he wrote his own opinion, concurring with the majority, just to make his point about all this crazy resisting going on in the lower courts. I think if there's one effect, if there's one great thing that comes out of the Trump presidency, it's cleaning this up and finally appointing some good justices. And, you know, Bush, in many ways, for the lower courts, he appointed some bad people, too. So we've had Clinton, Bush, Obama, a total of, 24 years of really bad appointments to some of these lower courts. Not all bad, but mostly bad. And it combined, if you take Clinton and Obama, what do we have there? Is that 16 years? 16 years of left-wing appointments to all these circuit court, district court, and court of appeals positions. There are so many left-wing nut jobs in our courts. Trump's got to flush them out. And as vacancies come up, got to get them in. And for that, you need the Senate. So, folks, if you're in a state where the Senate's up for grabs, go out and vote. Doesn't matter if you don't like Trump. Doesn't matter. This matters to you. And in our upcoming legal segment here, which we always do at the bottom of the first hour, I'll explain to you how this may affect you, how a conservative court actually matters and could matter to you someday. All right. Don't go anywhere. Short break. Back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Majowski back in the saddle. All right. Let me tell you here in our legal segment, do you work for the state? Do you work for the county? Do you work for the city? Do you work for a private employer that is, for whatever godforsaken reason, unionized? This recalls a great story. So I was political as a kid. It might not surprise you, but I was very political, and I remember I'd carry around and was reading in middle school my Rush Limbaugh books and, you know, what was it? See, I told you so. I remember that. I was carrying it. And if, you know, public school right now, I tell you, back then even, 92, what was that, the year, was that Clinton? Clinton got elected in 92, right? So 92, schools are a hotbed of left-wing activity. But I had a science teacher who was a great guy. He was a Christian guy, very conservative. And this was in Irvine at my middle school. And this guy, he found out that I was conservative. And the very first thing that he complained to me about when we started talking was how the union, right, the teachers union, takes money from his paycheck every month, takes money from his paycheck. He has no say in it. He can't choose not to turn that money over. And then that union goes out and funds the Democratic Party apparatus in the state and on the federal level, buying, you know, politicians, buying votes of people that he, this teacher who's giving up his union dues, fundamentally disagrees with. So in other words, for example, he believes vehemently in the right to life. And yet his paycheck, his money, is being siphoned out and taken and turned over to politicians who are decidedly pro-choice. It's an example. And it is something that has been, in my view, just criminal. And I felt this way. I've felt this way ever since he explained it to me. What would I have been, 12, 13? So at any rate, along comes this case, Janice. It was just decided this week. Janice is the defendant here was AFSCME, the American Federal State County Municipal Employees. And this is a union of public sector employees. Now, this case overturns a previous case that made all of this legal back in 1977 when America was on a left-wing tilt. And it was filed by a guy named Mark Janice, and he's a state employee. And every month, every time he gets a paycheck, you know, the state controller that writes his check, the guy, so this is brilliant, right? The state has hired a person who actually collects union dues, gives it to a private company, a private union. That union, in turn, funds a political apparatus that goes and petitions the state to pay workers more money. This is like insanity. The state is paying more money to pay more money, which is why in Illinois, where this all is happening, Illinois is bankrupt. It's an asshole of a state, just like California, because these people are all making six figures doing, you know, blue collar work. It's insanity, getting lifetime benefits, lifetime pension, all that crazy stuff. You know the story. This case stops it. This decision says enough is enough. Employees cannot be forced to pay money from their paycheck if they don't want to belong to the union. They don't want to be in it. They don't want their money taken out. They can opt out. This is a great decision for freedom. It is a great decision for the First Amendment, but it's a great decision for you. Because it doesn't matter if you're a worker, if you're bottom of the totem pole, or you're a business owner. You and I, we live in a state that has been robbed, blind, absolutely victimized by public sector unions. The unions have turned our state inside out. We are the 12th, 13th, whatever largest economy in the world. And we're broke. Our roads are terrible. It's like Kandahar. Most of the world, I mean, Orange County is a little better than LA County. Sorry, guys. But I'm telling you, if you're in LA County, it's Democrat on Democrat on Democrat. And guess what you have? Your roads, literally, it feels like you're in Afghanistan. And producer Robbie's been in Afghanistan, so I've had him vouch for it. So this is good. This will turn the tide, the political tide, too, because without money, these unions are broke, right? And they now have to deliver on some value proposition instead of just taking money from your paycheck. Without your vote, without your consent. So I love this, and this is good for you. Okay, this is good for you as a consumer. This is good for you as a resident of the state that you live in. This is good for you as an American. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Okay, more on these court decisions. All very very relevant. For example, you hear about the cell phone case. Is your cell phone data private? We're all talking about data privacy, right? I'll tell you more about this when we get back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Yeah, I need to make a very important economic argument for why unions suck. look, in economics, price, value, right? Value of a good or a service is relative to what you pay for what you get. And that is improves, increases or decreases, right? The value increases or decreases based on efficiency. Okay, so when you're in business, okay, I'm talking to you now not as a lawyer because lawyers are terrible at business, but I'm talking to you as a business guy. In business, your entire game is efficiency. You actually want to pay people well, but you want good people. You would prefer, as a business guy, especially here in California, you'd prefer to pay one guy 80 grand a year and have him do an amazing job than hire three people at 30 grand a year, 20 grand a year, whatever it is, minimum wage, whatever, that are going to do the same or worse job. You're looking for efficiency. And in the game of efficiency, by the way, it rewards qualified people. So on the labor side, it rewards the people that bring the efficiency up for employers. Employers are always looking for who's going to help me make things more efficient. And I am willing, as an employer, to always pay for that. Labor unions, their game entirely, in sum, is inefficiency. If you've ever been involved with any union, you know that as a non-union place, you can do the job with three guys and do it really well. The union shop is going to come in and tell you, no, you need 10 guys and they need to take all these breaks and this guy needs to be paid this much and that guy needs to be paid that much. And it's insanity. I remember when we were building our office building, doing some TI work on it. That's tenant improvement, TI, tenant improvement work. And going in, and suddenly I'm there talking to the foreman and great company, big construction company. They treat their people very well. And suddenly a guy shows up with a couple of goons and they're all wearing, vests and have some union logos on it. And they just show up trespassing on our job site. And they start talking to our people. I say, hey, what the hell are you doing here? He goes, well, we're just here educating your guys, your subs on union work. We notice that this is a job that's ongoing and you guys don't have any union work and da-da-da-da-da. And that was his bad day that I was there. So I got into a little kerfuffle with him. He said they were going to protest me. And I said, spell my name right. If you're going to put up then my dream my entire life is to get picketed by union. But don't misspell my last name. So just get every letter right and do me that favor and I'll come out and take pictures with you. So they didn't protest me. But what they wanted to do was to add people to the job, make us pay more money for them. But the more money that I'm paying isn't going to the worker. It's going to the union. The union is the one that's benefiting from it. It's such it's like a legalized shakedown. And the irony of it is the marketplace figures all this thing out. By the way, if you're a plumber or a painter right now, you're in short supply. There's a lot of building going on and there are not enough plumbers, there are not enough painters, there are not enough, journeymen to do quality work. So consequently, guess what? Yeah, well, I know painters, I'm trying to get some stuff painted on the house. You can pretty much name your price. This is true. And if you're good, extra more so. That's how the economy functions. So when it comes to unions, they bring inefficiency to the process. And the private sector can still deal with it because at some point you've got a guy, you've got a boss, you've got a company owner like me who is looking at it going, okay, all right, the union's here, all right, but I still need to work out efficiencies and I'm going to work around it. And you've got somebody there who's minding the end equation. Does the math add up? But when it comes to the state, public sector unions, this is the biggest crime of them all, right? Because nobody's minding the store and they're electing, right? They're collecting funds from public sector employee paychecks, putting it into the coffers of the Democratic Party, electing politicians who are turning a blind eye to all the and then giving all these ridiculous pay increases. And breaking, I think, the traditional notion that we all have, look, if you work in the public sector, you make more money. And you work harder and you don't have job security. If you work in the private, But if you work in the public sector, you know, you get less money, but you get job security, maybe better benefits and the like. And that's been turned completely on its head because what's going on? Yeah, you've got guys, you've got blue collar sanitation workers in L.A. that are making six figures. It's crazy. And they got retirement for life. You know, they retire at 55, 57 and they're drawing a full paycheck till they die. Jeez, it's insanity. Where do you get a deal like that in the private sector? Nowhere is the answer. OK, I'm going to get to the Carpenter case. Cell phone privacy. This is a huge, big decision from the Supreme Court. It affects you. Trust me, even if you're not a bad guy, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, all right. Every time you are anywhere with your cell phone, what is your cell phone doing? Well, if it's working, it's acquiring a signal from a nearby tower site. And not just one. The way these things work is they acquire a signal from multiple sites. And that is how you're able to basically pinpoint the location of a cell phone. And my understanding of this is that, you know, there are these location points are stored and accumulated very easily by the cell phone company. And they have this data. They're holding on to it. It's on a spreadsheet. It's on some sort of table. And it's there. Now, if the government suspects that you have been a bad boy, what can they do with that data? Well, they have been basically coming to cell phone companies and say, turn it over, give it to us. And then based on that data, they go, well, look, you know, you were here, location X, and you were at location Y, and you're at location Z. And around the same time, there was a robbery at location X, Y, and Z. So, aha! We got circumstantial evidence. And this is exactly what happened to a guy named Carpenter. And Carpenter was his name, Timothy Carpenter. And they basically went through, the state went through 127 days. Well, what is that? That's a lot, right? That's a quarter or more of a quarter than of a year, right? So 27 days and had an average of 101 data points every day. And they didn't get a warrant. They didn't get a warrant. And the question was, right, does the Fourth Amendment that prohibits the unlawful search and seizure of your private papers, things, search of your house, your residence, your office, the like, does that particular protection apply to data that you have handed off to a third party, i.e. Verizon? Or AT&T or Sprint or the like. Well, interestingly enough, I am pleased to report that the court has ruled yes, it does apply. And I think it moves the Fourth Amendment into this century, finally. And I also think this is a great example of what I mean by originalism. Originalism doesn't mean, now this decision was written by... Who wrote it? I think it was Roberts. Yeah, Roberts wrote the opinion. This originalism doesn't mean that you are stuck in, you know, in the 18th century. It's not what it's about. But it is about the meaning, the plain meaning of the Constitution and understanding what our founding fathers, the writers of the Constitution and the ratifiers of the Constitution intended. All right. And they did not intend the government to be able to, ex post facto, find everything out about us without getting a warrant. It's not that you can't get the information. It's that you can't do it without a warrant. So this guy gets convicted based on the data. Cops didn't get a warrant. Goes up through the circuit courts. Interestingly enough, basically gets shut down everywhere. Finally goes up. The Supreme Court accepts the case and rules in his favor, saying, yeah, this is a seizure, a Fourth Amendment seizure. I think any constitutional reinforcement, judicial reinforcement of the Bill of Rights is a good move for you and I. I think it's very dangerous, guys, to take a pro-law enforcement position. Even though I'm a pro-law enforcement guy, I believe in checks and balances. I like the concept of a detective, be he working for, you know, your local police department, the state, or the FBI, to have to explain himself to a judge. The standard is not high, but explain himself to a judge, hey, we have reasonable suspicion to believe that person X is doing bad stuff. You don't want the police to just be able to go snoop through your stuff. You don't want that. Well, go through a bad breakup. Has anybody here dated a cop? Don't you get a little worried if you've gone through a breakup and now you've got this law enforcement person out there who can access every database and look everything up about you? Yeah. Do you remember? Oh yeah, sure. This was happening with the NSA. The people were all snooping on their exes and pulling up their exes' text messages, and you know there's no warrant. There's nothing. You can click a button and spy on your ex. This is with one example. So I'm all for giving the state powers that are checked by some legal authority, and the court reinforces it's good for you and I. And the interesting thing too in all of this is, you know, we're all dropping our panties over what private companies are doing with our private data, right? We're worried about Facebook. We're worried about, you know, all these social media platforms. But Google, Amazon, what they're doing with our data. But I am actually far more concerned about what the state does with my data than I am with Amazon. Because Amazon is going to use my data and sell me stuff. They're going to put targeted ads out there. They're going to sell it to third parties. They're going to find out that I enjoy buying dog toys for my puppies. They're going to find out that I enjoy buying books from Thomas Sowell on Amazon. They're going to find out that I have dachshunds, I'm conservative, and I have kids. Okay, big whoop. But the state can lock me up. That worries me a lot more, folks, than all this nonsense about data privacy. And the irony is that the countries like Europe that are so obsessed with private data, you know, privacy, have no constitutional protections for their citizens from that data getting abused by the state. And that is total nonsense. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Ha! Okay. Sam Rogowski here, reporting for duty once again. Top of the second hour. We're flying through everything, and let me back away from everything here. We got into a lot of minutiae in the first hour. Sorry, it was dense, I know, but it's just an overview of how momentous this week was in the Supreme Court. And these decisions affect us, so I wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page. But I also want to get into sort of the greater political zeitgeist right now of what is cooking in the kitchen. And if you missed it, on Tuesday, there was a absolutely earth-shaking election in New York State. And what happened, well, I'll tell you what happened. A millennial got the Democratic nomination for Congress. Her name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she is 28 years old. Now, I just a brief aside here. I remember being 28 and thinking I was hot. You know what? I look back now, today being my birthday, 38, looking back at me 10 years ago, and I was positively brain dead. Just the things I did. Anyway, how a 28-year-old has anything good, whatever. But she thinks very highly of herself. She's ousted a 20-year Democratic congressman. So she was running, against, in a primary, against a Democrat that had been elected and reelected and reelected in two different districts in New York. His name is Joe Crowley. And he's out of there. He's gone. So why am I talking about a little congressional race in New York? Because I think that this is one more sign of the Democratic Party being lost in the wilderness. Stephen Miller, writing for the New York Post, likened this election to Groundhog Day, or at least, what you know, Punxsutawney Phil comes out, predicts if there's going to be winner or not. And you know, if he crawls back into his hole, doesn't come out, whatever it is, you got six more weeks of winter. And he's saying, look, this means six more weeks of winter for the Democrats, figuratively speaking. And I want to expand on that because he's right. This is exactly the direction where this is all headed, because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez ran on a complete socialist left-wing fairy tale platform. If anything, and I'm not just saying this because she's touting her Latin heritage, but I mean, she's completely co-opted the failed Bolivarian revolution of one Hugo Chavez. She might as well run as a Chavista. Meanwhile, right, Venezuela is 43,000% inflation as of 2 days ago, and people are eating each other because there's no food. The Democratic Party is, on some level, on some grassroots level, going far left. What did I tell you? And I've been saying this is a broken record, but in 2016, had the DNC allowed fairness to prevail in their primaries, who would have become the DNC pick, the Democratic nominee? It would not have been Hillary Rodham Clinton. No. The Democratic Party is, and its fundamental essence right now, the party of Bernie Sanders. And Joe Crowley, by the way, gets ousted, been there 20 years. And you may look at that and say, well, this is good. This is refreshing and get a young face in there. That's what Congress needs. But it's devastating for the Democrats because Joe Crowley is 56 years old. Yeah, okay, not a spring chicken, but he's middle-aged. And compared to Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and other members of the Democratic leadership, he is a young guy. Because they're all ancient, fossilized. You got, you know, Nancy Minister Pelosi out there babbling because her mind's gone. And what you need in a party, what you need in a movement, what you need there is you don't need just youth and vigor. Youth and vigor only gets you so far. You also need somebody. You got to have some leadership that it's working its way through the ranks. And they're blowing their leadership out in these primary contests and picking crazies. It doesn't work, incidentally, it doesn't work on the right either, okay? I mean, when you look at Roy Moore down in Alabama, it doesn't work. Roy Moore gets blasted out of the water. And but that's the nature of it. So the question is, who's got more crazy in their party? And right now, it's the Democrats, and they're proving it time and time again because they're obsessed, absolutely besotted with Trump hate. And their entire platform is resistance, resistance, resistance. And the only proffered solutions that the Democrats have seem to be to confiscate production and means of production and redistribute it based on whatever criteria they have that is not in line with capitalism. Well, the problem there is that whenever this has been tried, economies tumble, they crash, they burn, and means of production disappear, vanish altogether, and you have poverty for all. So you move, instead of from poverty for some, you move to poverty for all. This is the liberal way. Tried and tested. History is on our side, folks, when it comes to this. this district guarantees that she's going to become a congresswoman, right? It's a Democratic. I think the Democrats outnumber 7-1, 8-1, whatever it is. It's a safe district. So now that she's got the nomination, there's virtually no chance the Republican in the race will win. I don't think he even has a website. I looked it up. He's not doing anything. He's just showing up. He's like the token Republican in the match. But if I were a Democratic Party bigwig and I had some logic left and I wasn't completely devoted to the anti-Trump platform, I would be looking at this right now and I would say, this, you know, Houston, we got a problem. Yes, because the grassroots, the people that are most energized or you're counting on to show up at the race are all raving mad, frothing at the mouth socialists. And we're not a socialist country. Even on the right, on the left, doesn't matter. We're not, you know, redistributionists. It's not who we are. Now, there's equal madness on the right. And I'll tell you the failings right now of the Republican Party. And they're illustrated by the Never Trumpers. The Never Trumpers and I had to pull this out here. Bill Kristol, you know. Oh, gosh. Once upon a time, I respected this guy. He's so lost in delusion when it comes to Trump. It's crazy. But he's become, I would say, maybe the unofficial dean of the Never Trumpers. And he said earlier this week, a couple days ago, talking about the Kennedy retirement, he writes this: I'd probably prefer the jurisprudence of Trump's pick to that of Kennedy, meaning whoever Trump picks for the court, I'm probably going to like what that person does more than what Kennedy has been doing in the last 30 years. But given that the debate, or should I say the war, over his successor is going to intensify, an overheated political culture and hyper-partisan political system, I'm inclined to wish Kennedy hadn't retired. The insanity here is that when you strip away Trump's tweeting, when you strip away Stormy Daniels, and you strip away stuff that for some of you, I understand you can't separate it. But when you take all that away, what you're actually seeing is a very successful presidency. And it's being, if anything, yeah, we understand that the left is going to oppose it. But the Republicans that continue to oppose it, even when they are ideologically in lockstep with what Trump is doing, simply protesting his style, is a definition of crazy. Bill Kristol, 10 years ago, would be arguing about the Supreme Court, exactly echoing everything that I've said in the first hour and have said time and time again on this program. Him and I would ideologically be 100% on the same page. And yet he is so enraged by the buffoonery, right, of Trump, the perceived biffism of Trump, that he, on even a fundamental issue such as the Supreme Court, would prefer that Kennedy stay in and risk dying in office under a Democratic president. This is just where I separate from this consultant class establishment, you know, fuddy-duddy Republican group of the quote-unquote thinkers. I'm lost. I don't talk like Trump. I mean, sometimes I do. Get me angry enough. But I don't like all the tweets. I'm with you. I understand it. But he's effective and principally is doing great things that are proving more conservative than Ronald Reagan. And standing up to an establishment and to a media that traditionally is very happy to cow Republicans and conservatives into submission. Even Marco Rubio, right, another consultant class Republican, talking about McCain and how the press is lauding McCain. He said this week that, you know, McCain's a patriot and everything, but in 2008 when he ran for president, journalists now talking about his virtues portray him as a madman. New York Times smeared him the minute he got the GOP nomination. Romney, back in, what was it? When did he run? Oh, my gosh. 2012, right? He runs on he's a good guy, runs a moral panel, gets smeared by everybody. The left attacks whoever is up on the podium, is up on stage. And all these Republicans are forgetting it. So this is so interesting to me because this election, 2016 midterms that everybody has an opinion on, that everybody says something's going to happen, and where you at the office, at lunch, at the water cooler, you want to be the smartest person in the room, right? You want to know what's going on. And I'm telling you, this is one of the most fascinating midterms I have ever witnessed because I think all bets are off. I think on one hand, you've got a crazy Democratic Party that is picking socialists. Nobody wants that. That doesn't wear well. And by the way, Venezuela is giving you really bad press right now because the country's eating itself. And on the other hand, you've got Republicans that have maybe one of the most successful Republican presidents in office, and they're distancing themselves from him. They're fighting to distance. They're jumping like rats off a fleeing ship over style. Now, who comes out a winner in all of this? In my view, the big winner this week is Mitch McConnell. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate majority leader, he's the head of the Republicans in the Senate, and he's, by virtue of the Republicans having the majority, is the Senate majority leader. Very powerful position. For example, when it comes to picking and not, well, approving a Supreme Court nominee, because Trump will pick a nominee that has to go to the Senate for approval. Who runs that process? Well, it's the Senate majority leader. He decides the time frame. And if you'll remember, Mitch McConnell's the guy who took Obama's, you know, limpy pick at the final stages of the presidency, Merrick Garland. Remember that guy? And said, no, we're not going to do anything. And he just sat on his hands and didn't do anything. And consequently, Scalia's seat remained open and was then that paved the way to Gorsuch getting in. But Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans are hugely unpopular in the Trump base. They're hugely unpopular because they're perceived to be a lot like Bill Kristol. You know, anti-Trumpists, never Trumpers. And the Trump enthusiasts are the ones that drove this Republican success back in 2016. Make no mistake about it. This wasn't Republican turnout. This was Trump turnout. And it benefited Republicans. So the big winner here, with this resignation, resignation of Anthony Kennedy, is actually Mitch McConnell, because one, now he is front and center. He looks like a good guy, and actually, him and Trump now are on the same page. There's one thing. So, yeah, McConnell's much more of a pragmatist than some of these crazy never Trumpers, and he doesn't like Trump, but he's willing to work with Trump on things that he cares about. He cares about the Supreme Court. Thank goodness. So he's going to come out of this a winner. And consequently, I really do think in the midterms, if there's any particular tilt, on one hand, you got the crazy Democrats doing crazy socialist things, electing millennials, okay, to Congress. And on the other hand, you got the Republicans who, yeah, they've got Trump, and you may think of him as a ball and chain or somebody, you know, dragging the party down. But that's only because you're watching MSNBC. That's only because you're reading the New York Times. That's only because you're in a bubble. But in the real world, the economy's getting better. Job rates incredible, just, you know, black unemployment record lows. Women unemployment record lows. Total unemployment record lows. People are getting paid more. Wages are on the rise. Companies repatriating back to the U.S. And you live in downtown San Francisco. Good for you. You're not seeing any of that. But if you're living in Iowa, if you're living in Ohio, if you're living in West Virginia, you're seeing this. And there's a perceived sense of success. And combine that with the Supreme Court weighing in the balance, that's going to motivate people to go to the polls. So, yeah, it's a toss up. But I don't see a blue wave. 100% do I not see that. And that may put you a little bit higher and ahead of people in the know when it comes to predicting what the future is. So that is my crystal ball. Don't go anywhere. Back right after this. Sam Rojofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. course, you need jelly beans for that.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Democrats' new star, move aside Kamala Harris. You are old hat now. This is the new face of the Democratic Party, and they're enamored by this chick. She just won the primary for the 14th district in New York, very safe district previously held for years and years by Joe Crowley, an establishment Democrat who was probably in line for speakership. Or at least minority leader in the House. So, this is great. You want to know what her platform's about? I want to give you a sneak peek. This is the ultimate Democratic grassroots panty dropper. A right to housing. So I guess everybody deserves a house. Or an apartment or a dwelling of some kind. Everyone also deserves a job. So there's a universal jobs guarantee. And hold on, the best part yet, Medicare for all. This is good. He also wants to abolish ICE. So even Chuck Schumer wants to, defang it, declaw it, whatever you want to say. But she wants to abolish it outright. The thing that I love about these promises, like universal jobs and health insurance for everybody, Medicare for all, I always wonder, where do you pay for this? Margaret Thatcher, famous quote, socialism works just fine until you run out of other people's money. I mean, look, Medicare is not for all in California, and it's still bankrupting us. It's crazy how expensive it is. Healthcare is expensive, especially when it's run and managed by the state. More disturbing, and I'm noticing this emerging in the Democratic Party, is massive anti-Israel sentiment, and also, I would actually say, some alarming shades of anti-Semitism. So she loves Hamas, thinks Israel's a terrorist state. That all is pretty typical for the Democratic Party. But then she was supported by a New York City council candidate whose platform was literally, and this is a direct quote from her platform, to defeat the greedy Jewish landlords. Is this the Third Reich? I mean, the most insane thing about this is the more I hear anti-Israel sentiment on the left turning into anti-Jewish sentiment being vocally expressed, put into campaign literature. And then in an incredible contortion, the left turns around and calls Trump and Trumpists Nazis. It just doesn't work. It doesn't add up. It works just fine if all you're doing is staying on the MSNBC CNN reservation. As long as you stay within the sandbox that is put out there for you, you believe the propaganda. But this isn't North Korea. We don't have one or two official news agencies, no matter how much the Democrats would wish to do so. And we have options. We have Sam Nation, for example. And people can tune in, listen to the podcast, read the tweets, and have other sources of information to weigh against what they're hearing in the mainstream media. And this free exchange of ideas is vital, and it's challenging to these notions. And one of the contradictions that are contained in right now and what the Democratic Party is doing are substantial. The entire immigration debate is a contradiction, is it not? The hysteria over a photo taken from Obama's term, when you had Clinton, Bush, and Obama, did nothing to fix the law, did nothing to improve conditions for minors. Obama himself slapped down by the Ninth Circuit Court and told he couldn't imprison minors together with their parents longer than 20 days, excuse me. Then the media shrugs its shoulders and says, pass. Republicans are Nazis. And then on a week when things are just going disastrously well for Trump in the eyes of the media, a ginned up controversy emerges, a new talking point, an old photo dating back from the Obama years of kids in cages wrapped in tinfoil. And all hell breaks loose. But a lie always, there's a proverb in Czech, you know, that a lie has short legs. And a lie doesn't get very far if there aren't enough facts behind it. And I think in some ways the immigration debate is going to massively backfire on the Democrats. And it's going to backfire because the question will be asked, where were you in the last 12 years? Where were you the last 18 years? Yes, you're right. You're morally correct on this issue. But what have you done about it? You've been in Congress this whole time. And this, by the way, is extremely relevant when it comes to these crazies like Ocasio-Cortez, because they will win Democratic primaries because they will make that argument. Joe Crowley, where were you on immigration? You talk a big talk against Trump, but you did nothing for 20 years in Congress. And consequently, the only wave that's going to be coming is a liberal Democratic crazy wave. But it doesn't guarantee success in the general election. And that's something to remember. Okay, quick break. We're going to do Friday Funny up next. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rojofsky. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rojofsky, all right, Friday Funny ties into a serious story, but let me get to the funny angle first. So a man named Reginald Scott C. is obviously very familiar with the expression that something is or can be that you don't like or is ridiculous can be chicken, and then the word for poop that is one that I'm not going to say here on the podcast. But you're familiar with the expression that, hey, that thing, that's chicken poop. He's so familiar with this expression that he decided to take it literally when he was protesting the Red Hen restaurant in Lexington, Virginia, Lexington. He's from Martinsburg. Now, you know, the Red Hen, this is the place where Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's Trump's press secretary, was eating dinner with family and friends. And the owner comes over and ejects her from the restaurant. I'll tell you a little more about that and some of my thoughts. But there's a big protest outside. And since the restaurant is called the Red Hen, Reginald Scott C. decided to throw chicken excrement at the Red Hen restaurant as part of a protest. And my understanding is that, according to Breitbart News, C. joined numerous other demonstrators outside the establishment allegedly slinging gobs of chicken feces and straw. The author of the article notes the protest was otherwise classified as semi-peaceful by local authorities, despite some quote-unquote shouting. Well, let me tell you my thoughts on this. I think that the owner of this business is free to kick out of her business whoever she wants. Okay? All right. If I had a little restaurant and it was my pride and joy and it was, you know, this is back to the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. I generally think that owner of a business, I favor giving owners of businesses broad discretion to eject people from the restaurant, from their restaurant or place of business. I like that. OK, I mean, it can't discriminate, can't throw out people based on the color of their skin. But generally speaking, if they don't like the person, you're out. But let me tell you something that I found really despicable, if it's true, about the story, is that she didn't just kick Sarah Huckabee Sanders out of the restaurant. She chased her over. She went somewhere else to a different place in town. And the owner and a few people from the restaurant followed her there and continued to berate her for supporting the president, being a Trump stooge and a despicable human being and all this stuff. And I think that this is just such a stupid move on the part of a business owner. You really have to. I've always, have I mentioned the restaurant here in town? I have to be very discreet talking about this place. I have this favorite little restaurant that is in Orange County. It's very good food, hole-in-the-wall place. And it is run by basically a Mexican separatist. Okay, the chef that runs this place is like diehard Mecha, whatever they're called. He's just a diehard Mexico guy. He hates Donald Trump. Now, I go to this restaurant. And I love it, and I've got I know the waiters there, and I would think that I'm a model guest, and they like me. As best as I can tell, they like me. But I am fearing the day that the chef figures out what my political leanings are, because I think I'm going to get banned. I'm convinced this is the kind of guy that would kick me out of his restaurant. I believe it in a heartbeat. I've heard that he's done things like that. I haven't verified it, but I've heard. And surely, if I came in with a Trump hat, I would go flying out the window. So it's an interesting question. Is that good for business? I don't think it's good for business in Orange County. I'm sure he's got other Republicans that eat there. You don't want to alienate. If you're in business, like being a movie star, if you're De Niro, you want everyone going to your movies, not just diehard Trump-hating Democrats. You want everybody to like you. And when you start to have this perception, and the media gives people this false perception, this is why people thought Hillary was going to win 100%, because they were inside their own bubble, inside their own echo chamber. They're only polling people that are on their radar. And they're not talking to the silent majority out there who went to the polls and voted for Trump. And so you know, it's very seductive to listen to everybody around you, to listen to your friends, listen to the news, and feel that you're just being reinforced in everything that you believe. But, well, we'll get to this. It ties into this political violence that is on the rise in our country. I'm going to talk about that next, because I think this too will really backfire on the Democrats, and they haven't been vocal enough in denouncing it. And that is going to hurt. So more on that when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Yes, bad week for the Democrats. Absolutely. As I opened the show with saying that they are on, or should be, I'm placing them on suicide watch, looking out for my friends across the aisle. Part of where they're going crazy is this political violence emergence. You remember when Trump said during the election, he said, guys, he had one of his rallies. He said, no, he repeated this all the time. He says, there's going to be so much winning. You're going to be sick of winning. You guys, if you elect me president, you guys are going to win, win, win. Do you remember that? I'm paraphrasing. Well, wow. It was funny. Did I take it? No, I didn't take it all seriously, because I'm a realist and I understand how difficult it is to get things done. I think that considering the massive amount of opposition to Trump, he is doing a tremendous amount of winning. There's no question. And it is infuriating the left, because they for years have been able to operate by even with Republicans in power, people like Bush. And people like, Bush Sr., they were able to convince Republicans, both in the White House and in Congress, to be Democrat lights, right, to be basically Democrats, by guilting them into following their agenda or berating them into submission. The debate has always been framed by the media and by the left as, you don't care. You're a hater. You're a Nazi. And all of a sudden, Republicans, go, I'm not, I'm a compassionate conservative. I care, I've got a heart. And next thing you know, you got a guy like George W. Bush who runs it as a conservative and ends his term basically as a Democrat. And I'm sitting over here scratching my head thinking, Bub, your mandate was to be a conservative president, and you're failing miserably. Along comes Trump, and he refused to be cowed by the establishment, by the media. And consequently, he's scoring victories in spite of the headwind, and it is driving them mad. So now they're resorting to making pronouncements like the one by Maxine Waters, our local congresswoman from L.A., things that are not even too oblique of references to violent protests. Get out there and fight. Fight them on the streets. And what used to be the purview of, let's say, fringe groups like Antifa is now becoming more and more regular. Last week, you saw, what did we see? Just this past week, protests outside of McConnell's home. Protesters, attacking Mitch McConnell, who's, by the way, a very centrist guy. Who's that actor, Seth Rogen? Is that his name? Dr. Audio. Seth Rogen, right? Is that him? Paul Milktoast Ryan. Paul, I don't like Trump, Ryan, is with his kids, runs into this actor, wants to take a picture for his kids, right? And he goes, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Okay, it's not violence. I get that. All right, not violence. But it's just lame. And you're not protesting against Trump. You're protesting against a guy that is protesting Trump. You're protesting against a Republican. And this is my ultimate point and my ultimate answer to that tweet by what's-his-face? Bill Kristol. Oh, yeah, I would probably prefer Trump's pick. But, you know, the dialogue, it's getting too crazy. And I would prefer if we could just tone it down a little bit. And if Kennedy would stay on the court and risk it going to a liberal, I'd take that over the dialogue going off the rails. You Republicans that think this way are stupid. You're stupid. Because the left, the Democrats, the media, they don't care that you've taken a stand against Trump. They are out to destroy you. They're out to destroy Trump, but they're out to destroy you. They want socialists in power. Their grassroots are motivated, and they want to turn this country, no joke, into Venezuela. If you think I'm kidding, you gotta wake up and smell the revolution. And so with all of this said, you know, the Republicans, some of these people really need to wake up. Because the left is doing crazy things and these violent protests. What was it? The Homeland Security chief was drummed out of two restaurants by an angry mob. This isn't who we are. Like, we don't do the angry mob stuff. The Tea Party, what, the Tea Party got together and protested and the media goes, terrorist group. And now you've got mobs of people chasing people from restaurants and we're like, oh, yeah, that's resistance. It's okay. In the long run, they will lose this argument. Things will get out of hand. Somebody's going to die eventually. Somebody's going to get hurt bad. And it is not going to be good press for the left and their cohorts in the media. I promise you that. Don't go anywhere. Last segment up next of what has been an action-packed show today. Back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Murjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Murjowski, a special Sam Nation shout out to two faithful Samsonite listeners, Pam and Chris Hawley. You guys, I love the love that you send me. They are both in Prague as we speak, a beautiful city, my adopted hometown. And apparently it's a beautiful day there. So, yes, when I am back in Prague, guys, let's do that. Glass of wine, coffee, somewhere pretty, and we can touch base. I love that we have followers all over. That's one great thing about a podcast versus terrestrial radio. You can really spread the word across the globe. without requiring a tremendous amount of infrastructure. So we live in a great time, and I'm enjoying this. Especially interesting considering that post-war Czechoslovakia, when it became a communist country, one of the things the Allies did was fund Radio Free Europe, and this was an enterprise that broadcast the BBC and other outlets, media outlets and news that encouraged freedom and gave the people that were stuck behind the Iron Curtain the real scoop of what was going on. Now it was punishable by imprisonment to listen to Radio Free Europe. People went away to jail if they were caught tuned into any of the Radio Free Europe frequencies. And the government also would broadcast a disruption signal on top of the Radio Free Europe transmissions. So it became, you know, if you were listening on your radio, you'd be listening to the BBC, but over it would be some chortling, horrible, screeching sound effect that was being layered on top of that broadcast coming from West Germany, for example, or from Austria, wherever the antennas were. The interesting thing to me is that our world in the last 60, 70 years has changed so dramatically that what used to be a voice of freedom and of reason, i.e. the BBC, has become a loony left-wing bastion of socialist apologism. But these great institutions have been devoured by liberals, co-opted, and destroyed. It's just, there's nothing to it. We do have listeners in England, you know what I'm talking about. The BBC is just a vapid bunch of crap. Political correctness, wokeism, you know, they're all fighting each other for who's more socially conscious. And lost in all of this isn't just real news. It's a humor. It's dealing with things that need to be dealt with. You can't mention anything about Muslims, perhaps immigrants coming from a certain part of the world, creating a disproportionate amount of problems. Can't talk about that. But we as a culture let off steam. We let pressure out when we talk about things. This is what's so great about this country, having a First Amendment that ensures that no matter how repugnant a view, it deserves to be said. It's protected from state intrusion into its origins. So this is so important to a healthy, vital democracy. I've said this many times. I'll continue to say it. The most alarming thing about Western Europe is all the things you're not allowed to do and not allowed to say. Political violence in this country has no place, and it shouldn't exist, and it shouldn't be encouraged. But, a lot of people are saying, well, we should prosecute these people for inciting riots. And really, the standard for that under the First Amendment is very, very low, very, very high. Excuse me. I mean, you can't prosecute it unless it's a virtually imminent incitement to violence. So let these crazy people say what they're saying. Let them spout off. Let Maxine Waters do her thing, and let it be discredited in the marketplace of ideas. All right. Tell a friend about the podcast. Make sure they know where to find it. Sam Nation on iTunes. Also at Sam Nation on Twitter, at Sam Nation on Instagram. You want to be connected to us during the week when we're not around talking. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Friday and have a great Saturday and Sunday. Looking forward already to next week. Thank you for everything you do. I always enjoy this. Love you all. Sam Rogowski, over and out. Keep on moving.